Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's Body Care Breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
Hello and welcome to the political party. Today's guest is Anas Sarwar, the leader of the Scottish Labour Party. And oh my word, are you in for a heck of a ride? There is no way to explain quite how this show ends up. But Anas basically takes control of the thing. And I mean, the ending is just bonkers. So before we talk about that in a little more detail, don't forget you can email the show, Political Party Podcast. And in fact, before then, oh my word, an announcement, a wonderful announcement about some future guests. So there's one more I'm on the verge of being able to announce at the end of January. But here are the coming guests for the next few shows. So on Monday, the 22nd of November at the Vaudeville Theatre, my guest is Anthony Scaramucci. He is coming over from New York to do the show. He will be there live in the West End. The Mooch. Do not miss it. He is incredible. 2 weeks after that, the former Secretary of State for Health, former Foreign Secretary, the man who almost stopped Boris Johnson from becoming Prime Minister, Jeremy Hunt. And of course, his Select Committee's report into the government's handling of COVID has been fascinating reading. 2 weeks after that, the Christmas special. I can now announce who the guests are. We will have live music from MP4. Rosanna Allen Khan will be returning. And the special guest will be Jacob Rees-Mogg. That is on Monday, the 20th of December, a Christmas special with Jacob Rees-Mogg, MP4, and Rosanna Allen Khan. That is going to be, I mean, you don't need me to tell you, that's going to be a very special night. And then the first show of 2022 on Monday, the 10th of January, I will be joined by former Labour leader Neil Kinnock. I've also, 2 weeks after that, got a very, very good guest penciled. I can't quite announce it yet. But my word, what a run of guests. Anthony Scaramucci, Jeremy Hunt, Jacob Rees-Mogg with MP4 and Rosanna Allen Khan, and then Neil Kinnock. These are the biggest names. It, not just in British politics, with the Mooch, in global politics. And they're all going to be live on stage in the West End with me. I cannot wait. You can get tickets for all of those shows at mattford.com/live. Oh my God. Anyway, I get so, I love being able to announce the guests because obviously I'm always working on people going back and forth. So it's so cool when they confirm. And of course, today's guest, this episode, is an instant classic. So I'm not gonna talk too much at the start because we need to crack on because this is gold. Anyway, you can email the show, politicalpartypodcast@gmail.com, where you've seen politicians perhaps in an unusual setting. Aaron's been in touch. He said, I remember my school history teacher, Ms. Wade, telling us a great MP sighting she had as a kid growing up in the valleys of South Wales. She was having a sleepover at a friend's house around the age of 10 in the late 1980s. After they'd gone to bed, her friend's dad came into the room, woke them both up and made them come downstairs. There was a strange man in the living room and her friend's dad said, girls, I want you to introduce you to the next Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Neil Kinnock. Neil said hello and shook their hands. Then the girls were ushered back to their room. Turns out her friend's dad was a local Labour councillor and had Neil Kinnock over to discuss local politics. Aaron, well, very topical, as Neil Kinnock will be live on the West End stage on Monday the 10th of January next year on the show. But Neil Kinnock crops up so often in these emails. I think he's possibly the most cited politician, sightings of Neil Kinnock over the years, all over the UK and indeed abroad. Keep them coming in. Politicalpartypodcast@gmail.com. Of course, you'll be able to spot Neil Kinnock live on the West End stage at the Duchess Theatre in a few weeks' time. On to today's guest. Now, Anas was on the show probably over a year ago now over Zoom. And that was brilliant. And he's phenomenal to talk to. This, however, really is something else. And it has everything. He is a really deep thinker and he's a great communicator and he's able to, he has that ability that Gordon Brown had to really move an audience. There's something about a level of emotion that very few politicians have and they can just stir you a bit. You almost think, oh my God, it's going to make me cry. And it could just be, they could just be talking about what they believe, you know. He's a phenomenal communicator. He is also very cheeky and very funny. And this is an interview, frankly, that I struggled to control and in the end lose total control of. And, well, I won't give away exactly where this goes, but suffice it to say, there are videos of it on the internet that you need to find. So, without further ado, this is a live recording, recorded live at the Duchess Theatre. You can get tickets for all future shows at mattford.com/live. Of course, one of the great treats of being able to do this live is being able to open the show with some stand-up about the month in politics. There's been a lot of scandal around this month, and I began by talking about one case in particular. Claudia Webb, of course, it's not just Tories that are naughty people. Claudia Webb, the former Labour MP, was found guilty of harassment in court last week for phoning up a female friend of her male partner as, well, I shouldn't laugh about this, she called her a slag and threatened to throw acid in her face. And when this was brought up in court, she said, no, I was ringing as a courtesy. Your Honour, I was simply... No. She actually said those comments were taken out of context. No, I was... Your Honour, I was using the word slag like the Cockneys do. It was... All right, old slag. You know, it's just throw acid. But it was an invite to a rave. Yeah, nothing wrong with it at all. Perfectly normal. She got rumbled, by the way, Claudia Webb, because when she'd been making these threatening phone calls, to withhold the number, you meant to dial 121 before phoning the number, and instead she'd been dialing 141... So her number wasn't withheld. And that, you will always catch a Corbynista because they're thick and terrible with numbers. Good to see some Blairites in the house. Welcome to the show. But absolutely incredible to say the comments are out of context. Corbyn, by the way, gave her a character reference. He said she was a woman of good character who'd made a positive contribution to acid sales, I imagine. I mean, so fucking serious. At one point, this is amazing, when they're recalling some of the phone calls that were played in the court, and her partner says to her, I think you've gone mad. And the magistrate in the trial says, is it possible that you have gone mad? And she went, I can't be mad, I'm a member of parliament. I don't know if you've seen that place recently. I don't think that's the strongest defence. Like, what sort of, like, where does that, I can't have been cattle rustling. I'm a member of the Scottish Parliament. Your Honour, I can't have been brandishing a gun. I'm chair of the local parish council. That's not, the office you hold is not a defence against this. I mean, obviously, if there was any doubt about whether Claudia Webb was sane or not, just ask her about the last election. I'd like to question the defendant's sanity. Miss Webb, do you recognise this? Exhibit A, it's the last Labour manifesto. Yeah, you do recognise it, right? And may I just ask the defendant, did you find that a credible document? Every single word, you thought free broadband for everyone was a good idea. No further questions, Your Honour. Nigel Farage is in trouble, you may have said. I mean, he obviously lives in a permanent state of trouble, but he's in particular trouble. He's on this video messaging app, Cameo, where you can pay celebrities to read out messages for your mates. So they'll do it for birthdays, for weddings, that sort of thing, or they'll just kind of have a bit of banter. And someone has got Farage. If you haven't seen the video, you have to look at it. Someone had got Farage to say this, like, happy birthday to Dean from all your mates in Stoke-on-Trent, up the rah! And then text as soon as bit. Now, if you're not familiar with the phrase up the rah, it's a pro-IRA slogan. Therefore, it's bad, right? So, guess there are any sort of doubters. All right, that's cool, yeah. up the rah, of all the people, up the rah! And then there's another one where he goes, done again. He said, well, look, I wasn't familiar with the phrase, 2 weeks later, he gets it again. Dean, happy birthday to you. I know a few of you are going up to Newcastle with a lorry load of volunteers for a great weekend. Again, if you're not familiar with IRA phraseology, that is another Irish Republican violent phrase, a lorry load of volunteers, right? It's mad enough. Why would you want a video message of Farage? It's such a weird thing that, firstly, there's a video messaging thing with celebrities, and then politicians are on there, and that he's on there. I mean, try explaining this to any other previous generation. It'd be like your grandma going, oh, you never forget what your Uncle Percy got me for my 60th. Telegram from Enoch Powell. It says, dear Phyllis, stop. Hope you have a great birthday, stop. Hope you have so much dinner, you're drowning in rivers of food, stop. Works better written down, stop. Love, Enoch. Fucking insane. I mean, the problem is now you sort of want to just prank him. The thing is, Farage, he gets 75 quid a video. He knows what he's doing. He would literally say anything. Hello to Heavy D and the West Hampstead Massive and the Heavy D crew. Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. Death to the Western Infidels. For 70 quid, he would absolutely do it. There's another row brewing. I wasn't aware of this until I saw it on Twitter, but there's going to be a new law outlawing the photographing of women breastfeeding, which feels like that should be illegal already. If you don't know the person, obviously. And not that I'm not like not pleading the case. But in fact, a member of the House of Lords is a government minister. Now, I've written down what he said because it's so insane, there's no way I could remember this. But he got up in the House of Lords this week, and this is about taking photos of strangers who you don't know breastfeeding. He said, making it illegal to photograph breastfeeding without consent would be rough on a man who photographed his wife on the beach for his own sexual gratification and would under... I can't read my own handwriting. I was so overwhelmed. And would unwittingly include a woman he didn't know with her breast out breastfeeding. Now, to make this case, obviously it says a few things about Lord Wolfson is the guy who said this. Firstly, who is taking pictures of their wife on holiday for future sexual gratification? Judging by that reaction, most of you. Sort of awkward silence works. Yeah. Worst thing in the world. But imagine, like, he's obviously at some point had to defend that, but you would never say that unless you'd found yourself in that situation. Your Honour, I am not a pervert. I can tell there is a perfectly innocent explanation for why I've got a photograph of another woman breastfeeding on the beach. Yeah, it's because I was going to masturbate over the picture of the other woman. Thank you very much. This was said in the House of Lords! You can read this in Hansard! The House of Lords! But we could unwittingly make criminals. Yes, I will give way. Yes, I will give way. That's my honourable noble and friend. Agree with me that this draconian law, although well-meaning, may well make criminals of many good men, many of whom populate this place. Yeah. It's COP26. People enjoying COP26? The problem is, this is the problem. It's important, it's fucking boring. No wonder Joe Biden fell asleep. Oh my God. Right, yeah, we need to do more. Do we need to spend 10 days going? We should really do more, shouldn't we? Yeah, you're gonna do more. I'll do a little bit. Should we go home now? Are you just, it's the fact that Boris Johnson's hosting it. You think, oh God, you know what crap bands have been doing all week. Are you having a good cop, bad cop? You having a good cop? Yes, yeah. Good cop, yeah. Bad cop, yeah. No, I'm having a good go. I love the fact as well that he's hosting it in Glasgow. Welcome to just a wine sturgeon up. Welcome to Glasgow, a great British city. Yes, great Glasgow in the United Kingdom. Yeah, welcome to this wonderful British place. What's he say? Which is Okai the New. And so much of the food in Glasgow is sustainable. Haggis, it has a global footprint actually of miners. It's lower than literally. Tennis is always because no one wants to import it. That's the point. Wonderful. Go to the Blue Lagoon. We're going to have a wonderful. Go to the garage and the hydro and the great British place. It will drive Sturgeon absolutely mad. He used that phrase, didn't he? Always looking for like sort of film reference. Like James Bond, he said it was like trying to solve the climate crisis. It is, got up in Glasgow and said it is 1 minute to midnight, which of course is the scariest time to be in Glasgow. I think that really hit home to the audience, like, fucking hell. This is serious. 1 minute to midnight in Glasgow. Crikey. What are we going to see? But it's the whole Bond thing as well. It's like a Bond film where we're trying to, it's a device. We're trying to do the client. Firstly, Bond and Boris have a lot in common. They're basically both psychopaths who don't value women. Just, but Bond, he would obviously love to be Bond. Boris as Bond would be an absolute disaster. Yeah, I'd try martini, chicken, mustard, and a caramel latte. Chuck in some, do you have truffles? Never get round to it. You were supposed to assassinate Blofeld. Right, I'll finish this cake, and then, come on. Maybe some port. He actually watched Bond in that new Downing Street briefing room that's cost us, the taxpayer, millions of pounds. He used it to screen a Bond film viewing for him and his... basically turned number 10 into a man cave. Yeah, I've got a new bust of Winston Churchill. Yeah, tip its head back to piss dispenser. It's what he would have wanted, I'm sure he is. Yeah. But he's hosting COP in Glasgow, Boris, and Nicola Sturgeon. Nicola Sturgeon's obviously desperate to kind of make the case for independence at any point. And... took out these newspaper adverts that said, from a nation in waiting. A nation in waiting welcomes the rest of the world. I don't think that sounds as good as she thinks it does. Basically saying Scotland isn't a nation, which doesn't sound very pro-Scottish. But she said, no, it's got nothing to do with independence. But firstly, you know, I get why they always want to talk about it, because it's the one thing they really care about. But if that's the only thing you talk about, it does drive people mad. Like, don't try and get it into everything. Like, say, no, how do you like your tea? Milk, two sugars? What? Free from Westminster rule. Right, okay. Maybe not. It's like living with a born-again Christian. You're like, at some point, he's going to mention God. Just give it 5 minutes. That's about London, is it, mate? Yeah. But then they said, actually, no, these posters have nothing to do with independence. Oh, fucking hell. No, when it said, fuck England, no. What it meant, there should be a comma there. It's like, fuck England. Amazing, it's next door. She actually said something, we went to an Arctic Circle conference the other week and she said, actually the most northern part of Scotland is closer to Scandinavia than it is to London. Cool fact, bro. Still in Britain though, and it always was like, you know, if I reach really high, my fingers are actually closer to the flat upstairs. Yeah, we still have to pay the rent on this one, mate. So what sort of silly point are you trying to make? So funny. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the political party and a guest I've been looking forward to interviewing for a very long time. Yay! It's a bit of a catchphrase if you've not been here before. Clearly only two people cheering it suggests it has not caught on. After 8 years, the catchphrase has died. But ladies and gentlemen, I genuinely am excited about tonight's guest. He is genuinely one of the brightest stars in British politics, with a lot resting on his shoulders. He is the man that may well keep Scotland inside the UK. He's a charismatic, clever guy. He's absolutely lovely. Please give a huge welcome to the leader of Scottish Labour, Anna Sawar!
There you go,
mate.
How are we all?
Anas, welcome. A friendly welcome in London.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, we don't get that in reception in Glasgow or Edinburgh, so it's good to have a friendly audience. I should say, thank you, Matt, for the stereotypical drink you left me in my in the green room, some Ain Brew. So thank you for the stereotypical drink. Although I have got a bugbear, so when I went to campaign in the Batley and Spen by-election, you can buy Ain Brew Original cheaper in England than you can in Scotland. That's horrific.
Time to leave, man.
Time to leave.
That's it. It's one insult too far.
Totally. £2 in Scotland, £1.50 in England. What's that all about?
I mean, obviously the price will vary across England. I'd suggest if you tried to buy it in London, it would be a lot more expensive.
Is that right?
Oh, God, yeah.
More expensive taste down here, isn't it?
And suits are, apparently, which is presumably why I haven't worn one since.
Matt, I'm willing to take fashion advice from a lot of people, but... I'm not sure it's your strong suit, pal. I mean, to be fair, you were once compared to George Clooney. I mean, that's true. Matt was once compared to George Clooney. The woman said, compared to George Clooney, he's an ugly bastard.
But, I mean, you're pretty casual tonight. Jeans.
It's one of those things. The great thing about being the boss or the leader is you get to decide what the line is. And one of the things I've just decided to do, and this might prove in the longer term to be a negative, is I'm just going to be myself. And I think too many politicians come into the job thinking they have to pretend to be something else. I'm going to be myself, fight for what I believe in, and hope we can take the people of Scotland with us.
Yeah, and wear jeans on a West End stage.
Absolutely. I mean, I won't tell what happened when I first entered and you were still getting changed, Matt, in the backstage. But I have been really worried about every single tweet you have done about this show. You have used a peach emoji. So I am really worried about your obsessions, by the way. It's freaking me out a little bit.
Well, we'll come on to that. I mean, that's a reference to your bum, really, isn't it? It's your bum got... Your back got more coverage in the Scottish elections than your front.
Well, I don't know how to take that. That's loaded in itself. So it's really interesting. So the dancing obviously gripped the attention. And I saw there was a piece written by, I think it was a Scottish nationalist. It's always good to assume it's a Scottish nationalist. But apparently I had learnt this and it was all a setup and it was something that we copied from the US. It was absolutely, completely off the cuff. And I am just really, really pleased that the two burlesque dances I did before we did the Uptown Funk routine have never been leaked.
I did Candyman.
I had the thing on. It was terrible. It was absolutely horrific. But most people don't know this. So there was a burlesque group doing a dance outside Livingston Football Club. We pulled up in the campaign bus, and one of my staff suggested we go and say hello to them. So I went over to say hello, and one of the ladies joked and said, "Will you do one of the routines with us?" So I said, "No problem. I'll do a routine with you." So we did Candyman. I got no idea what the second burlesque dance was. It was horrific. So what I said to him was, okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll do the second dance if you agree to do one of my routines. So if you notice in the video, I'm actually leading that dance in terms of the Uptown Funk dance. Not leading it very well. My kids are still traumatized by it. But it was a great moment. And we got caught up in the whole hype of the whole Peachgate. Because anyone that understands Scottish politics, so you get two votes in the Scottish Parliament election. You get your first vote, I feel like they're back in election vote. you get your first vote, which is the purple ballot.
And that's when people vote SNP.
And that's when people vote Labour, especially if they live in Jackie Bailey's constituency. Jackie got the biggest cheer of the night. And the second vote is the peach ballot. So we had this thought, someone in the office got a bit carried away, that let's do a big push on the peach ballot. And one of the staff actually ordered a huge... board, peach emoji board, which turned up to the office, and look, this is no exaggeration in terms of the size, and it just looked like a giant pimpled arse. So we decided we cannot use this on the election trail. So what we've decided to do with it is Jackie Bailey and I have signed one cheek each, and we are going to auction it at the next Labour gala dinner, so all bids are welcome on this massive peach emoji.
So I've got so many questions. One, burlesque. So was that... Are there any photographs of that? Any footage?
Oh. I sincerely hope not.
But how did you... So, like, did you do the full work? Like, tassels on the nips?
I did not do any tassels. See, this goes back to your crazy fetishes, Mark. I'm really worried about you, Matt. Like, seriously. Like, I won't tell about how you said you're really keen for me to meet your partner after the show. We'll go and get some private time. You talked about how it's a really secluded and private flat. No one will know we went there. And the fact that I literally turned up and you were still had your trousers open, belt open, shirt off. So I'm really, really worried about what's going to come after this show. I have not signed any disclaimer that means you can do what you like. I'm strictly going on the stage and leaving, Matt. So no dodgy thoughts, please. My aunt's somewhere in the audience as well, by the way. So I'm sorry. This is a halal event.
What does that mean?
You don't know what halal means.
Oh yeah, but what's...
You were shouting Allahu Akbar earlier on, and when you were doing the comedy routine, a bit of casual Islamophobia, you know, with your Allah Akbars, and you don't know what halal means. It basically means meat that we can eat.
Yeah, I know
kosher.
What halal is.
You know, the Jewish people have kosher, we have halal.
I know what...
I bet you know what halal is when you eat the kebabs, Matt. You know? You and your slimline diet, you know?
Oh, the joke I made was about Nigel Farage being Islamophobic.
No, I wasn't accusing you of being an Islamophobe, so don't worry.
I'm not.
Although it does remind me, I was at the
reassuring,
you know, I'm glad you feel reassured that you're not. I mean, some of your best friends are Muslim, of course, Matt, so it's fine.
One less after tonight.
I'm clearly on the show just to give you a bit of balance in terms of the equality report you got to do after the show. But I was at the COP26 rally. And without a word of a lie, there was. I should be doing the show rather than him, shouldn't I? I watched the early comedy earlier on. I was thinking I can do a better job. But I was at the COP26 rally. And there was this woman that came out. She was a white woman. Came up to me and shouted to me, "You're a scumbag." I thought, okay. "You're a fucking scumbag." I says, okay, very polite. She goes, "You're a racist." I goes, "I'm a racist." She goes, "Yes." She goes, "And not only are you a racist, you're an imperialist as well." And I just looked at her and I said, "So you're calling this brown boy with Pakistani heritage of Muslim background a racist and an imperialist? Not very self-aware, is it?" And she was filming me, instantly deleted, never appeared in social media. That's how to do it. Embrace it.
Wow. I mean, Sturgeon's getting punchy these days.
Well, I mean, she is thinking of life after politics, after all, so you never know. She might be on the West End with you, Matt.
How do you find her as an opponent?
Look, you've got to give credit where credit is due. She is an excellent communicator. She has the ability to spin any situation and position into being a reflection of what she's always argued for. And I think one of the big challenges you have as a political party and those that oppose it or want to replace it in government is we can choose to deliberately ignore the strengths of our opposition and think somehow they'll fail, eventually we'll get in, or, you know, they'll cock up and we don't need to be better. We've got to be better ourselves. And the stark reality is the reason why we've kept losing elections is we haven't been good enough. And unless we get better and offer people a credible alternative, they'll still keep winning and we'll keep losing. And the fundamental thing that I'm trying to do with the Labour Party in Scotland, and I think this is something we should do across the UK, is people talk a lot about the culture of factionalism. See, the culture I want to change is the culture of defeatism. I want us to end the culture of defeatism and get back to winning again, because as I know you watched the documentary in terms of the Blair Brown years, is if politics is not about winning, then it's about nothing. And none of us joined, of those that are in the Labour Party, joined the Labour Party for it to be a debating society or for us to feel good about ourselves or us to wake up the next morning thinking, it's okay, we've got two bad governments, but at least we feel good about the values we believe in. We're in politics to change people's lives. And if people in the Labour Party don't recognise that, frankly, they're in the wrong place. Got a bit serious here, Matt, I apologise.
No, it's good to be serious. Just on the documentary, though.
Yes.
Great telly, isn't it?
Fantastic television.
What's your favourite bit?
I love that bit, and I feel bad saying this because Gordon Brown is genuinely one of my political heroes. But that bit where Gordon smiles, thinks the camera's gone, and drops a smile. Now, I've seen that in the flesh. Gordon's not a man to be messed with. But what really struck me about it was, one, they understood the need to win. But the other thing they understood was, no political party can progress if they think about their past. They've got to think about the here and now and the future. And that's what Labour needs to remember again is, let's stop dwelling on the past glories. Also, let's stop dwelling on the past failures. If we're not going to talk about the successes we had, our opponents aren't. And let's think about the future of the country. And if we do that with a vision of a hope, we can't win in the politics of us versus them. We lose in the politics of us versus them. We can't win with the politics of despair. Labour's only ever won an election if it's grasped the politics of hope. And we can't go into an election again saying, your life is really shit. Britain is really bad, we're going to make it just a little bit better or make your life a little bit less shit. We can't be in that situation again. We have got to sell a positive vision, truly love our country, have a positive vision for our country and tell people the difference it's going to make. Pride of place and pride about the future of our country, and that's how we win again. And I think for us as the Labour Party, I often think about this, particularly with working class communities, is you get all this talk about Labour needs to re-engage with the working class, it's lost its working class base. We got decimated in the working class communities in the last election. And the reason why is we too often, I think, fall into the trap of talking down working class communities rather than talking with working class communities. Working class communities are proud of who they are. They're proud of the communities they live in. They're proud of their background, their aspiration for the future, and they love their country. And unless we grasp that and talk to them in a positive way, we aren't going to win them back.
How hard is it as a Labour politician in Scotland to make the case for the union when it's currently led by Boris Johnson?
Look, there's no denying it makes it harder. Therefore, the greatest contradiction we have in Scottish politics right now is on one side you have Boris Johnson in many ways as the biggest threat to the United Kingdom because of his cavalier approach, and you've seen it this week around corruption and such like, and at the same time the Conservatives pretending that they are the great party of the union. What the Conservatives are, they are ruthless about keeping and maintaining power. And what we have to do is to expose that, but demonstrate to people that you can have a different kind of Scotland and a different kind of UK within the United Kingdom, and expose the hypocrisy of the SNP at the same time. Both of them feed off each other. Both of them are rooted in us versus them politics. Both of them are designed to divide communities rather than big communities together. That's where we've got to come and do something different. We've got to challenge the us versus them within all of us. And all of us to keep our country together, and all of us to end poverty, and all of us to end inequality, and all of us to rebuild the country we all love. If we do that, I genuinely think we can win the next election.
But you're trying to do that in a time when people are tempted by very simple answers, whether it's leaving the UK or leaving the European Union. What you're saying is laudable. A lot of people in this room will agree with it. The electorate don't necessarily seem to be taking that message on board.
Have we tried, Matt? Have we genuinely tried to defeat the politics of division with the politics of unity? We haven't tried. We went to the last elections saying to people, let's be opponents of the other half of the country and hoping we get 51, 52% to get angry with the other 48% to win an election. That's not how we're going to win an election. We've never tried to win on the politics of unity versus division in recent times. We have not tried to defeat the politics of despair with the politics of hope in recent times. And we haven't tried to defeat the politics of anger with the politics of empathy. What we've tried to do is take the politics of anger, double down on it and do our own version of anger, take the politics of despair, do our own version of the despair and try and win on that basis, and do our own different type of division. If we do that, we ain't going to win. And so we've got to be confident in our own identity, we've got to have a positive message to sell, and we've got to be authentic. And I think, and this is my what we've got to do in Scotland, but what my advice is to Keir in the UK party is, let's not try to pretend we're something we're not. Let's be ourselves and win on the strength of our personality and the ideas. Yeah, and the final point of that is the Labour Party often thinks, actually always thinks, that you win elections simply on the politics of ideas. Now, I'm not suggesting the politics of ideas is not important. Of course you've got to have good ideas. Of course you've got to take people with you. Of course you've got to have policies that are going to change the country. But we've also got to compete on the politics of emotion. And we have been defeated in the politics of emotion in Scotland for the last 14, coming on 15 years. And we've been beaten in the politics of emotion by the Conservative Party across the UK for the last 10, 12 years. We have got to compete, yes, on ideas, but also on emotion. Make that emotional connection with the electorate if we want to win again.
I watched all the leaders' debates in the Holyrood election earlier this year, as I'm sure everyone did. And it was great TV, and I thought you won every debate. And I was actually shocked that, because you did really well in the first one, I thought, well, someone's then going to win the second, because that sort of ebbs and flows. And I thought you won every single one.
You're biased, but Matt.
Oh, yeah.
You're biased, especially when you keep looking at my backside.
But I thought you genuinely did.
That's worrying.
Dispassionately, I thought you bossed it. I thought you were really good. I thought you came through the middle. I thought it was really weird that people were talking about the Constitution during COVID. All that looked really... And you did that emotional thing. And I think you have an ability to move people in a way that very few Labour politicians have since Gordon Brown. So why didn't you get a better result?
So let me share a stat with you that is, I don't think is public knowledge. So when I took over the leadership, we did polling which showed that yes, we were at 14% in the opinion polls, 14%, which is a horrific place for us to be. And that would have had us at less than 15 seats. And to put that into context, if you get less than 15 seats, you lose the right to even ask a First Minister's question every week. That's how serious it was. But actually, based on the polls, only 8% of the electorate in Scotland, less than 1 in 10, said they were definitely going to vote Labour in the Scottish Parliament election. 8%. So where we went from in terms of that 8% base, that 14% of the polls, to where we got to was stopping Armageddon, but not good enough. And I don't sugarcoat the result. I don't pretend it was a good result. It felt good, even though it wasn't good, because of what could have happened, what we averted, and actually the opportunities I think that we had coming out of the election, where people's hostility had gone, people's anger had gone, people were willing to have another look at us. But the challenge we've got is, how do we turn people's positive view about what we were seeing in the election into votes for Labour? And that's a much, much more difficult conversation, which is going to require the hard graft over the next period.
And you're trying to replace a government in Scotland that's a government in Scotland, but represents to a lot of people an opposition to Westminster,
yep.
Understandably. And not just on the constitution. Nicola Sturgeon is seen as a competent buffer against the policies of Boris Johnson. Yep. Even people who disagree with her would see her in that positive way. How do you get into that space then, when you're trying to oppose a government that's a government and an opposition?
So there's a psychological barrier there, which is, unless people in Scotland believe Labour can win again, we're going to have problems. And we've got a job of work to do to make people in Scotland and across the UK believe, but we'll think directly thinking about Scotland, that Labour can win again. And I think if people start to believe that Labour can win again and we compete, then I think you can see we have a huge opportunity to win people back come the general election. The problem you have is, if people assume Labour can't win, and all we're electing is who can most vocally and strongly oppose rather than who can actually govern, then that puts us in a really difficult place, because people will say, okay, I'm more likely to get a stronger opposition to this UK government from the SNP than I am from the Labour Party. So we've got to change that psychological position in terms of trying to win again, as well as making the emotional connection. Now, a lot of people think, and it's largely the case, that the votes in Scotland that we lost were all about the independence referendum. Now, I'm not going to for a second pretend that that's not the case for the vast majority of them. But we also lost a lot of votes in Scotland because people just thought that they were the most competent, that they were the most able, and that they had a decent record in government. Now, the job we've got to do is to expose their failures in government, but exposing the failures is not enough, because we've got to have a credible alternative. Show them we've got the competency to be a credible alternative government, and show we've got the ideas about how we can take the country forward. Now, I'm not pretending I've got the silver bullet to do that overnight. We are trying to reverse a 20-year decline. Labour's vote share in Scotland has only ever declined in 20 years. And the one blip being the Gordon Brown general election, when I think there was a genuine sympathy for the fact that we had a Scottish Prime Minister who was getting a really hard time from largely the English press at the time, so there was a bit of sympathy for Gordon Brown. So I think that masked some of the underlying challenges that we had. So we've got to overcome all of those things if we are to win again. And that is a longer-term process. The work's got to start now. And I'm not naive about that challenge. And I'm absolutely determined to do it.
And because Labour, particularly since the independence referendum in Scotland, I mean, Labour's obviously been poleaxed across Britain, maybe apart from in Wales. But it seems that in the wake of 2014, the Scottish Labour Party, elements of it thought, well, look, all our voters are voting for independence, we would have an easier, less stressful life, and less, you know, we'd get less abuse if we just say we're going to support independence, or we have federalism or something like that. Is that instinct still kind of present in elements of Scottish Labour? Do you have members, do you have politicians that say, why don't we just have an easier life, support independence, and then just try and run Scotland?
Look, if the test is whether life is easy or not, then we can make different decisions. But the test has got to be what's right or wrong. And the bottom line is, independence, isolation from the rest of the UK, looking inward and not outward, goes against the very values and principles why the Labour Party was founded. We are a party of solidarity, of social justice, of redistribution, and of sharing. And if we were to support independence, that would go against those very values. And one of the challenges we've got, and actually I've challenged people here in London and across the rest of the UK, is don't think that the SNP are our progressive friends. Don't think that they are just the Labour Party in Scotland with a salt iron. Part of their very mission to get independence is to destroy the Labour Party and to have chronic, lasting Tory governments across the UK, because it supports their case for independence. They are not friends of ours. If you're looking for a genuinely progressive alliance, we already have one. It's called the Labour Party. And we've got to expose what the SNP are and not get fall into that trap. And also don't fall into the trap of thinking, you know, she's such a great communicator. If only we had one of them. Is the reality is, look at our record on the ground. We have record drugs levels, deaths in Scotland. We have five times as many people dying of drugs in Scotland and the rest of the UK, despite us having the exact same laws. We have over 500,000 people waiting on NHS waiting lists. We have our education system that used to be one of the best, if not the best in the world. But what does the SNP do? We opted out of the international scores because we were embarrassed about what the scores might be. It's not a legacy to be proud of. And I genuinely think when people look back on the time that Nicola Sturgeon spent in government and the SNP were in government, people will struggle to see what were the actual meaningful, long-term, structural, positive changes they made in that long period of government that they had. I think the legacy is going to be one of a missed opportunity of division, but we've still got to be that credible alternative.
When you talk about inward and outward, people in Scotland might say, well, we voted to stay in the EU, and England and Wales voted to leave, so we're leaving against our will. We voted to stay in the UK and the EU. We are outward-looking people, by far, in terms of referendum outcomes, the most outward-looking part of this island. And look where it's got us. They might say, well, actually, the SNP say we can join the European Union. That feels like a bigger, broader club. And England, which is inward-looking, voted for Brexit. The deal's changed.
So a couple of things within that. One, I would challenge a central premise, but we'll come to that in a second. But one point about why people are supporting independence, particularly younger people. So there's a poll recently that showed that over 70% of young people aged 16 to 24 either supported SNP or supported independence. Now, I'm not surprised by that figure. And people get really shocked when I say that. I'm not surprised by that figure because if you think about it, in that 16 to 24 age bracket, a large number of them, if not the majority of them, have not lived a single day of their adult life in a stable United Kingdom. They've lived with a Brexit referendum, the fallout of a Brexit referendum, with the chaos of Theresa May, the chaos of Boris Johnson, and they're thinking, in their minds, they're not nationalists, they're not inward-looking, they believe in international cooperation, they believe in international solidarity, they believe in challenging global poverty, they believe in the fight against climate change, but in their view, because they look at the UK Tory government, they think the way we achieve that outward-looking internationalist Scotland is to leave what has been framed to them as an inward-looking United Kingdom and rejoin the world. Now, so we've got that challenge in terms of how we appeal to young people. But the central point that is a central flaw in the argument is every single argument that made Brexit chaotic and the wrong decision for the United Kingdom, multiply it by at least three times, that's the consequences of leaving the United Kingdom. So a recent Scottish Government's own statistics showed that if you were to add up all the trade we do with the whole of the rest of the world combined, it is still less than what we trade with the rest of the United Kingdom. So the idea that we leave our greatest trading partner to join a different trading partner is just not consistent and not right. But also there's another fundamental reason, which is I don't view it as, you know, what's good for Glasgow, it's fine, forget about Gateshead. Or what's you know, there are good people who believe in the same values we do across the whole of the United Kingdom. And there's lots of people in Liverpool, Birmingham, Manchester, Cardiff who feel just as disconnected from this Tory government as we do in Glasgow, or they do in Edinburgh, or they do in other parts of Scotland. Let's build some solidarity around that, and let's actually just replace this Tory government rather than just oppose it.
You were on Question Time recently.
I was. Making Brian Cox.
So okay, next to Brian Cox, we should be clear which Brian Cox we're talking about. We're talking about the actor from Succession, Logan Roy, one of the most formidable.
Great programme, by the way.
It's so
good. Has anyone seen that? I mean, yes.
That massive show. You've heard of that massive show.
Succession,
right?
Logan Roy, he's the exact same in person.
Did you say, fuck off?
Well, maybe.
Did he?
I'm not going to reveal any backstage secrets, but I think it's safe to say there are lots of similarities in the personality of Logan Roy and Brian Cox. He was great company, though. He was great company, and I look forward to seeing him again soon.
Because I saw him on Andrew Marr with Keir Starmer.
Yep.
And he was saying he's a socialist, but he's a nationalist and all this sort of thing. And he was saying that me and Keir Starmer probably agree on a few things. He seemed quite kind of reasonable about it.
I didn't watch the whole programme, but I watched the clip. And the one thing I would contest, though, is he made reference to the fact that his country, as he put it, my nation, my country as well in terms of Scotland, and I'm proud of my Scottish identity, had been ignored, had been sidelined. I don't accept the premise of that situation. I mean, we have had key big Scottish figures at the heart of the UK government for a very, very long time. One of them is sitting in the audience today, I believe. I can't see him, but he's sitting in the audience today, I believe. We talked about the huge role that Gordon Brown played in UK politics. So the idea that somehow Scotland was ignored or sidelined, I reject the premise. I think there's a very cogent argument to be made that while some people in Scotland, because this idea that Scotland's one homogenous place, that, you know, no Tory ever happens to belong in Scotland. The last party to win a majority of votes in Scotland was actually the Conservative Party. So let's not pretend that Scotland's a Tory-free zone, or there aren't Tories in Scotland, or there are, you know, only good people live in Scotland, but there's lots of bad people in England. Let's forget that Scottish exceptionalism. There are good and bad people everywhere. There are challenges everywhere. And how do we go about achieving social justice? We don't go about achieving social justice by dividing our country apart and getting distracted again. Brexit on steroids. Instead, it's about having a different vision for our country, and that's what we need to push forward.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And not just in government, leading Scottish figures, Andy Robertson playing for Liverpool, Kieran Tierney at Arsenal, Billy
Gilmore. I mean, isn't it terrible, right, that Scotland, we've got two of the best left-backs in the world, but every other position's a bit dodgy, you know, so it's...
Well, half of them are English, is the thing, like Shea Adams,
you would say that, wouldn't you?
You see them play for Scotland, and they come off like, yeah, it was all right, that, I thought we played all right. Like, hang on a second.
You're still bitter about that 0-0 draw, aren't you?
That was a stunning 0-0 victory for Scotland.
You're still bitter about it. Have you got over the final yet, by the way? Have you got over it yet? I mean, I should say
you are in London.
I should say about it. I was supporting England in the final.
Really?
Genuinely, I wanted England to win, and so much so I actually tweeted it's coming next door. Did you see it? It's coming next door.
With a little peach.
No peach. And what was brilliant about doing it is it was on that, I can't remember the name of the programme, the Channel 4, the last leg. On the last leg. They did this, it's coming next door. And I was in London for something. I was checking into the hotel, and the guy that was behind the counter says to me, I've upgraded you to a junior suite. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I took the card. And he goes to me, are you not going to ask why I upgraded you? I know. Why? And he goes, Nicola Sturgeon wouldn't have said it's coming next door. Although he did an English accent rather than a Scottish one. I should hasten to add, I wasn't doing an impression there.
But it must be so difficult for you when you're in Scotland, proud to be Scottish, supporting the Scottish national team, but there's a fixture like that when you just think, oh God, there are people on both sides of this that are going to try and exploit
you. No, but Matt, what's really interesting is, and I think this gets lost down here, is I don't think you can underestimate the goodwill that Gareth Southgate and the England team created for England in Scotland. In actual fact, he was probably the single biggest asset, him and the team, in terms of advocating the case for a union of nations across the UK with an outward-looking, unified, diverse England. And that's a really, really different story from what the far right or the SNP or the Tories want you to believe England is. And again, I would say to the English Labour Party is capture that Gareth Southgate England team spirit of what England is, and don't let those other forces of division define Englishness for you. Don't do it, because England is genuinely a diverse, outward-looking country, and people would love you to believe it's something else that it's not.
But you watched the England-Scotland game in England.
I mean, there's lots of Scots in the audience because no one agreed with that. Everyone was like, nah, forget that. Who's praising England? Forget that. Scots in London, like, no, these people are awful, you know?
But you watched the game in England, in Batley and Spen.
Oh, the Scotland England match.
Yeah,
I did. So I watched it. I went to this traditional English pub in Batley in Spain in my Scotland top. In my Scotland top, the only person in the Scotland top. Everyone else, England top everywhere. And so I went to the loo at half time, came back out, and everyone stopped, looked up at me. Oh, who's this guy in the Scotland top? And I just stopped and went, sorry guys, I'm just here to sell the pakora. They gave me the wrong t-shirt, I'm really sorry. So we just laughed it off.
But the problem is, we don't have pakora in England. No one knows what it is here.
Oh, come on, everyone knows what it is, don't they?
I'm telling you, honestly, it's a Scottish thing, pakora.
Really?
100%. Sometimes it gets called vegetable pakora and it's an onion barge, but you don't get chicken pakora like you do in the Blue Lagoon in Glasgow.
The Blue Lagoon? That's a fish and chip shop, mate.
Yeah, they do pakora there.
No, that's fried, that's battered up stuff, like, you know, Snickers, like Mars bars. That's not pakora cheese.
They
probably call that tempura rather than pakora, come on. Although you clearly know your foods, Chief.
Oh!
Oh! I mean, you should have seen Matt with the lockdown weight. It was terrible, honestly.
What are you doing?
You should have seen him on the Zoom calls. They say the camera had 10 pounds. I was wondering how many cameras were on him.
Oh!
Brutal, I'm never getting invited back.
I think at the start they were with you and now they think you've gone a little too far.
Am I being too mean to Matt?
Yeah.
If you think I'm being too mean to Matt, shout yes. If you think I'm not being mean enough, shout no.
No.
50-50.
Yeah.
Let's have a referendum.
Just on that, obviously you went for yes, no, which is the eternal Scottish choice. But if there was another Scottish independence referendum, do you think the question should be different? Should it be leave, remain?
Look, I think we've got to let the Electoral Commission decide if and when there ever is another referendum. I've a discomfort about those that have a vested interest in what the outcome is deciding what the rules are of the game. And if we have got an independent body that's there to make sure everyone plays by the rules, then they should have the role. And I don't know why the SNP, well, I do know why the SNP, are really keen for the Electoral Commission to have as little role as possible. If and when there's a referendum, everyone should play by the rules and let the independent people set the rules.
I'm sure the SNP would write a fair question. Should Scotland leave the shithole United Kingdom? Yes,
here's the
or maybe.
Matt, is, honestly, this might not sound fashionable right now either, but I honestly think if there's a referendum tomorrow, they'd lose. And I think they know that. And so all we're doing here is keeping Scotland on pause and repeat, to hold a certain percentage of the population together so they stay in power and they keep the levers of power and stay in government. And so we have got to find a way that we, and this is the big fundamental test for us as a Scottish Labour Party, is how do we find a way of capturing that mood about what is it going to take, how long do we have to wait, how much do we have to pay a price for in this never-ending push for what is something that's in the politician's own interest rather than in the national interest. I don't think we've yet captured what that message is, but that's a big test for us come the next election.
Because what seems to happen from afar is that the SNP...
Well, I'll take advice from you, Matt, because you're obviously... a real political strategist, a man of great talent and ability, someone who was a Labour Party staffer, of course.
That's right.
During the glory years, after you left, it only went one way. So
that's true.
Honestly, so I will take your advice on what we should do going forward. Matt.
Well, all I'm saying.
Why
is
why are people laughing at that? That's terrible. That's terrible.
All I'm saying is this.
I was being serious.
I don't think you were.
I was.
I don't think anyone else.
You know, you're saying I'm too mean to him. I'm trying to be nice to him, and now you're saying I'm not being serious. That's terrible.
From afar, it looks like the SNP are always saying there'll be a referendum next year or the year after. And the other side are going, well, maybe at some point, but not in the next 2 years. And this sort of next 2 years thing seems to be like a set debate. It's just, I mean, it's that, I understand why they do it. But from your position, are you just saying we can't have it in the next 2 years because that's like a tactic? You're like, get it off the next 2 years. We're constantly saying not the next 2 years. It's like tomorrow never comes.
Well, two things. One is you've got to give them credit for the fact that they have made a large part of the population believe that a referendum or independence is just around the corner. And they've kept people thinking that for 7 years and kept them on that precipice. So, I mean, that is a political skill in itself in terms of a communication skill. Yeah. The argument I make is, look, we have gone through the hardest period in living memory coming through this pandemic. We're not even through it yet. And when we talk about national recovery, it's not just some kind of spin line that's there to buy time. We genuinely have a massive job of work to do to rebuild the country coming through COVID, to make sure we don't have people's lives lost in vain. All those structural inbuilt inequalities we had pre-pandemic, they have all multiplied during this pandemic. And that focus, we've got a choice. But at work, we've got a choice. We can either choose to carry on fighting like we were pre-pandemic, or capturing that spin of unity we had in the country during the pandemic to actually change the country in the process. I would much rather be focused on that second part. One is what I believe, and secondly, it's the right thing in the national interest.
One thing that always heartens me, and I've been to numerous political events in Scotland, is that people from all sides can actually get on very well and have a drink together and socialise and have a meal.
It's got a bit more frayed in recent time.
Well, what I was going to say, actually, was not over independence, over the Gender Recognition Act. Seems to have affected Scottish politics in a way. I mean, I know Keir Starmer got asked about it, the stuff with Rosie Duffield. Why is it further down the line in Scottish politics, specifically in the SNP, this idea of sex and gender, in a way that it probably isn't in any other party yet?
Well, obviously there's promises made in a previous previous manifesto, and promises made in this manifesto. It's clearly a real priority area and passionate area in terms of the First Minister's own view. The challenge, I think, is transphobia exists. Trans rights are human rights. Women's rights have still got a long way to go. We haven't won that fight. And I think people often think that women's rights happen by accident. They happen because of previous generations, women's blood, sweat and tears, literally blood, sweat and tears. And I think we can find a way forward that doesn't undermine women's rights, but still also give people the freedom to live life the way they choose. And I'm not one of those kind of politicians that thinks, let's pit two communities against each other and see which one's got the larger size and we'll go with that one. Is how do we take the sting out of the debate and actually take people with us? That's not going to please absolutely everybody, but I think it will please the vast majority, and that's what we should do. And compromise has become a dirty word in politics. It shouldn't be. It's where we're making social progress.
But there are people that you get on with in other parties. You and Humza Yousaf have won awards together for the work you've done. Are you guys still mates?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm still giving him a hard time about his performance as Health Secretary and the fact that we've got record long waiting times. You said earlier on, Scotland is a nation in waiting. Nicola Sturgeon's own words.
Yeah.
She's right, waiting on NHS waiting lists, waiting for the bins to get collected, waiting for A&E, waiting for an ambulance. So Scotland is a nation in waiting, and it's largely Humza Yousaf's fault. So we'll continue to expose the failures. But one fundamental principle within that is, all joking aside, is we should have the ability to disagree without disliking. We should have the ability to have really heated debates, exposing people's failures, but not falling into hate. That should not be where we are politically. So that's not for me. So I'll go as far as I do in terms of calling out failure, obviously wanting to replace the government, but that doesn't mean we have to dislike and hate people.
No, he fell off his scooter a couple of weeks ago.
If you haven't seen the footage. You were in Scotland that day.
Oh, I thought it was so funny.
When you were presenting, of course, the Holyrood Awards.
That's right. So if you don't know, Humza Yousaf is the Health Secretary in Scotland. He'd, I think, broken his leg.
He's basically, what Matt's trying to say is, he's the other brown guy in Scotland. It's basically what Matt's trying to say.
You see, it's talking about old peace, we've all got to get on, we've all got to be nice. You're trying to frame me as racist. It's poorly.
No, I'm not at all. Not at all.
But for those of you who don't know, Humza Yousaf, he's the health minister, and I think he had an injured leg, so he was...
Yeah, no, it's a shame, actually, because he tore his Achilles playing badminton, so he's obviously in crutches. People are getting me that says
it's true.
It's a genuinely serious
injury. But he's basically got a crutch scooter, so one leg is walking, but the other
is... He's off the scooter now.
Okay, so it's like a crutch, but on wheels. And if you've got to go on Twitter and see this, he's sort of running down a corridor in the Scottish Parliament to get to a vote, clearly going too fast on a very shiny floor on this thing, and just stacks it, goes over. It's a funny video.
He did take it very seriously.
He did.
I mean, in that situation, you should probably just laugh it off.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have said, look, this time I got caught speeding or something like that. You know, because obviously he had the previous car incident. But, you know, in that situation, see when you made an absolute arse of yourself.
Yeah.
Just own it and laugh at yourself and be self-deprecating.
Was that the voice of bitter experience?
Look, absolutely. I mean, when you've had as many defeats as I have, you just got to laugh them off, you know? You know, to go through the election defeats in 2015 and then the brutal leadership election of 2017, you just got to embrace them, man. No point in hiding from them.
Yeah, and so you lost to Richard Leonard in 2017.
Yep.
How did that feel?
In all honesty, I genuinely believe that my two defeats are the best thing that ever happened to me. So my defeat in the 2015 general election, on a human level, on 2015, and also the defeat in the leadership election in 2017, was the best thing that ever happened to me. I am a better human being for it, I'm a better father for it, and I'm a better politician for it.
What do you mean you're a better human being?
So I think, see, when you come into politics really young, I think you can quite often get trapped in the bubble and into the tribalism of politics, seeing your side is always right, every other side is always being wrong. So that's one part. So you know, I took time out and generally did things that were beyond the bubble. I think the second part is, see, when you've got when people talk you up as being future leader or all the rest of it, that comes with its own level of pressure. See, being stripped of ambition is fantastic. Being stripped of ambition gives you in itself a freedom, but also I've got a confidence from it. So you know, it's all the stuff I talk about around racism and Islamophobia. Pre those defeats, I would never have had the guts to do it.
Genuinely. What, talk about it?
Yeah, I would never have had the self-confidence to do it. Because you, see when you're a minority, you don't want to highlight your own difference. You don't want to emphasize your own difference. And so you think about, okay, I can't be the person that's talking about racism, I can't be the person that's talking about Islamophobia, I can't be the person that's talking about minority issues, because I'll get pigeonholed, I'll get labeled, I'll be seen as only representing one community. So you try and play it down, you try not to talk about it. And I think having been through having been deputy leader, being at the 2015 election, the 2017 election, having been liberated of ambition, having experienced defeat, the bitterness of defeat, the self-reflection that comes with defeat, you get a confidence and you get a self-awareness that gives you the freedom to just say how you feel and to take on issues that you genuinely care about. And you also think, okay, what am I doing this for? I'm only doing this if I'm doing it for things, campaigning on things I genuinely care about. I'm not doing it for titles. I'm not doing it for positions. And so that liberation of ambition was genuinely the best thing that ever happened to me.
I've seen you talk about the racism that you face throughout your life. We've talked about it before. One of the most shocking incidents was only a few years ago from a Labour politician. I mean, some of the stuff you told me about, the stuff that people have said to you, is just mind-blowing. I mean, I think you've got every right to talk about it. I think the public need to know that stuff is said to you, to your face.
Look, how it's done is important. So whilst, of course, I've heard horrific things and things that I probably would have heard my parents' generation hear, and that I heard it myself, and I don't want my kids to hear what I hear or to have the same prejudices, because if that happens, then frankly, our generation, I mean, collectively, our generation will have failed if the same challenges are faced by our children that we faced. But you just got to be open and honest about it. And one of the challenges we have is, I think it's quite often thought that, you know, racism or prejudice is only one real political wing's challenge. No organization, no institution, no company, no anything is immune from any kind of prejudice and hate. And we've all got to redouble our efforts to build solidarity, to build coalitions around challenging that prejudice and hate. Although there was one good story, not good story, terrible story actually. I shouldn't call it a good story. But one interesting story, that's probably a better way of describing it, is during the independence referendum campaign, I was campaigning in Fife a couple of weeks before the referendum campaign, and there was a guy, I was campaigning with Joanne Lamont, walking down the street in Fife, the guy rolls down his window, says, "Oi, you, fuck off to where you came from." Obviously taken aback by it. I said, "And where do you think that is, pal?" And he goes, "England, of course." And I'm not going to lie, I wasn't offended. I just thought, yes, I made it. I made it. So it's not always like that. So that was entertaining. But no, look, it's a serious issue. And the key point, though, is, how do we build solidarity? How do we take it forward? I am in a privileged position. So it's one thing us calling out individual incidents that we face. I mean, it's been spiked again in the last couple of weeks in terms of individual bits of threats and abuse, etc. But never forgetting, I'm in a privileged position. The vast majority of people who face prejudice and hate face it in isolation, don't have a platform, don't have a voice. I'm in a privileged position. I've got a platform, I've got a voice. I get to use my platform and voice to call it out, challenge it, and hopefully root it out from our society.
It's interesting you mention the word privilege. Obviously, there's a discussion we're having, not just as a country, but the Western world, about privilege and what it is and where it lies. It's interesting that you call yourself privileged. Because I saw some people, when you became Scottish Labour leader, there was a nationalist guy that I follow who was like, oh, he's no ally of minorities or people who've had hardship because he went to a private school and he's come from a well-off background. You think, well, that's a different type of privilege. Surely, I would think it would be undeniable to most people that if you're non-white in this country, that is a form of disadvantage, however wealthy. Do you think, I mean, what's your perception of where our understanding of privilege is as a United Kingdom?
I mean, anyone that thinks someone chooses to become Scottish Labour leader is doing it from a position of privilege is probably not understanding the dynamics in Scottish politics. I am genuinely wanting to give the best years of my life to rebuild the Scottish Labour Party, to get us in a place to win, to be in government, and to change Scotland. And that's not from a position of privilege, that's because that's what I think our party is all about, and that's what life in politics should be about, as well as positively changing people's lives. But look, people have a hierarchy of prejudice, and it's unfortunate. There shouldn't be a hierarchy of prejudice. So I remember there being a story where, during the 2017 leadership election campaign, there was a high-profile Labour member that actually tweeted that the reason why Anas Sarwar can't be leader is his children will never understand what inequality is. So the guy tweeted, his children will never understand what inequality is. And by sheer chance, when I went home that night, my son Adam wasn't talking to anybody. And his mum said, Adam's not talking to anybody, you should go up and speak to him. So when I'm upstairs, I lay in bed next to him, and I said to him, what's wrong, son? You're not talking to anybody. And he started a new football club that day. And he said, actually, there's a backstory to that. Let me tell you the flip backstory to that about why people aren't born to see prejudice. The backstory to that is 6 months earlier to that, we saw this thing on Facebook, and it was this test to do with your children. So we did this test with Adam. So he must have been about 9, 10 at the time. And so what it was, so we said to Adam, okay, if you were standing opposite your best friend, Zach, what is the big difference between the two of you? And he said, Zach's taller than me. I said, okay, what else? He goes, Zach's got brown hair, I've got black hair. Okay, what's the other difference? Zach's Jewish, I'm Muslim. Okay, anything else? Zach's better at football than me. Anything else? No. Okay, think colour. And he said, oh yeah, Zach's got blue eyes, I've got brown eyes. And they just didn't see it. Fast forward 6 months, I'm back in that situation, I'm lying in bed with him, and he said, I went to play football today, and we did training, and then we played a bit of a game, and there was two boys on my team that said they weren't going to pass to me because I was the packie in the team. And that was the day he discovered racism and what inequality was. And it was the exact same day that I saw that tweet. And without a word of a lie, after I put him to sleep, I went upstairs, and I'm not much of a crier. I sobbed that night. I absolutely sobbed that night. And I honestly resolved at that moment that what was I doing this for? There wasn't a reason to walk away, far from it. But if we aren't going to use our platform, if we aren't going to make a difference, and if Adam's son is telling him that story when he's my age and his son is his age, then frankly, I have failed. And I'm not willing to let that happen. And on that day, that's when I resolved that we were going to be much more open, much more confident, and make sure we're making a change for future generations.
How do you talk to your son about that? What do you say to him?
So he didn't see his difference prior to that. Like, he genuinely didn't see it, and he obviously sees his difference now. And I think that's a generational challenge. So the way I think about it in my own head is, like, when my grandparents came over, they saw themselves as Pakistani. They were Pakistanis. My granddad's ambition was always, you know, do well for himself and eventually go back to Pakistan, but obviously settled here, fell in love with Scotland, brought his own family here. And then my mum moved here when she was four, brought up in the northeast of Scotland. she saw herself as Pakistani first, but was also really proud of her Scottish identity. My dad obviously came over when he was in his 20s, still saw himself as fundamentally Pakistani, but part of his Scottish identity. Our generation, we see ourselves as Scots first, Brits first, with a tinge of our Pakistani heritage. Our children, they've got no attachment to the so-called motherland. They're Scots, they're Brits, they're not going anywhere else. This is home to them. And I think for that generation, if they have serious questions asked about their identity and their belonging, that can have long-term lasting consequences. So I think that's a big, massive generational challenge for us, for that generation, about identity and belonging. But look, he kind of embraces it. He's the only one of my three sons that takes great joy in watching YouTube videos of people slagging me off. and learning lots.
Is there anyone you're aware of?
The other two probably do it, but just don't tell me. But all these different plays on my name, you know, and different swear words. It's fantastic. You should Google it afterwards. It's brilliant.
I can't believe I didn't. I feel like I've not done my research properly. So what sort of stuff?
I'm not going to repeat it on the show, but it's safe to say whenever people say, "How do you pronounce your name?" I always say to them, "As long as you use one of the clean versions, I'm fine." So. And the other thing is, like, I remember being asked by Torquil Crichton at an interview during the Labour Party conference about, you know, same privilege question that you asked me is, you know, there's people that say that, you know, it was decided from birth that you were going to be in politics, that your dad was in politics, decided at birth that you were going to be in politics. And I always say to them, seriously, if my parents thought I was going to go into politics, they would never have called me an ass. Come on, let's be honest about it. It's not going to happen.
But you know what, really, and I think about this so often.
I'm still waiting for that Sun headline when I mess up. What an ass. You know, not a reference to my peach of course. Actually, it should be in reference to my peach, of course.
Yeah. No one is determinism yet. But what always strikes about you is how young you are. You are 38. I'm older than you. That's mad.
I don't think that's surprising, man.
You've done so much. You've been a dentist, a member of parliament, an MSP, and leader of a political party. And you're 38.
I'm living my life in fast forward, man.
But, just as an individual, you must think, this has all happened to me quite young.
I started really young. I mean, I never wanted to go into politics. I actually went to become a dentist because... my dad wanted me to go into politics and actually tried to persuade me to stand in the Scottish Parliament election before I did stand for the 2010 general election. And I was adamant I wasn't going to go into politics. And that's why I went to do dentistry. I thought I'd go do a professional course, do a life separate from either, you know, business obligations or separate from politics. And that was my way out. He didn't talk to me for 6 months as a result, but anyway, that's a different story. But I was still passionate about the Labour Party, I was still passionate about politics, but I always thought I would be someone that would be more interested in the behind the scenes, the campaigning stuff. But, you know, fundamentally, politics is about making a difference, and politics is what changes people's lives. And if we don't get good people, and I'm not meaning that in any kind of arrogant way, I'm just meaning like if we don't get good people, values-driven people, into politics, trying to get in a place where they are in government and changing people's lives, then politics fundamentally fails. So I made the decision to stand.
So why dentistry then? What appealed? Is it that you can talk and they can't answer back?
It's partly that, although dentists have a really bad habit of asking the patient questions while they are operating. But actually, no, I had this thing where, like, obviously I wanted to work in the NHS, but see, when I was a teenager, I was like, you know, I'm gonna be a California dentist when I grow up.
Californian?
I'm a California dentist when I grew up.
Why
I mean, actually, my aunt who's in the audience, it's her fault I'm a dentist, actually. Because she's a medic, and her partner was a dentist, and she was adamant that I should go into dentistry. And so it's largely her fault that I was a dentist. And not people know this, but Professor Jason Leach, anyone heard of Jason Leach?
Yeah.
The clinical director. He was my professor at university. He was my professor at university. And it shows you how bad he was at his job that I left dentistry and went into politics.
Well, he's gone into politics now, so you both
he thinks he's a bigger. He thinks he's a politician more than I do, actually.
But he used to do well. A couple of density questions.
I'm happy to give you a live checkup on stage, Matt, right here, right now, if you wish.
I have got a problem with my wisdom teeth, actually, but I was going
to
ask.
Shall I have a look? You want me to have a look?
Yeah. Do most of you use oral?
Come on in.
Do most
Come on,
of
bring
you,
it.
Do most of
Get
you
me
use
a knife and fork.
Do most of you use oral B, or is that bullshit?
I use Colgate.
the photos of this look very bad.
I'm gonna crouch down for that very reason.
Sir, I've got impacts and wisdom teeth.
They open your mouth, shut up.
So they're below the gum.
Okay, I know what teeth are, by the way.
You actually don't have any fillings, so I'm quite impressed with that.
I do.
Yeah.
That one is like there's two snapped off.
What did you have for lunch, Paul?
I snapped on a bit of pork crackling.
I can see a bit of pakora in that. You're actually doing no bad. You're brushing your teeth. Floss a bit more though.
Really?
Yeah.
The problem is when I floss, it bleeds. So why would I carry on doing that?
There's a reason why it's bleeding. The reason why it's bleeding is because there's a start of a gum infection there. So you've got to start flossing more. Until eventually the bleeding stops.
Okay, that seems counterintuitive.
So does politics.
The problem I've got actually is I've got impacts and wisdom teeth below the gum line, and a gap has opened up. So it's prone to infection, so I'm constantly putting Curacept on it, swilling with Corsodil mouthwash.
Should we just take it out?
But should I have them just taken out?
I mean, I'm happy to do it live once again. Right, we can get some more alcohol in here. We can anaesthetize you.
It'd be nice if it was someone I trusted. Like, it'd be nice.
You don't trust me.
No, that's what I'm saying. I would like you to do it.
All right, okay. Can I do it?
Are you still qualified?
I am still qualified.
You're allowed to practice.
But I'm not currently officially registered.
Wow, it's like Backstreet Dentist.
So as long as you choose not to sue me, I'm more than happy to do it.
It depends what you do to me.
Are we still talking about dentistry?
Wait, this is. I can't just use this to sort of my private. But in general, would you say I'm sort of happy?
I've noticed with your shows, but you really do like to get into like your personal medical experiences. I mean, I was really fascinated by your asthma conversation.
Yeah.
And then we previously had a wisdom tooth conversation the last time I appeared on the show.
That's right. Well, the problem is
and it's still been going on since then.
Well, no, I've been looking after it. I mean, would you say just in there, on the whole, a sort of a good set of teeth?
I think on the whole, yeah, you've got a good smile, I think. You've got a good smile, Matt Ford got a good smile? Yeah. That was
under duress.
I was assuming there was going to be like a really overwhelming, woo, yes. No. But wasn't to be.
Wasn't to be. So, there's an opportunity now to ask a few questions. So, we're not having a roving...
ask questions, did he?
From the audience,
I didn't know that.
So, please indicate clearly. We don't have a roving mic because of COVID, so if I can ask for one sentence questions, I will then repeat the question back for the podcast, and we can have one sentence answers on us. That would be lovely. So, indicate clearly, and yes, down at the front there.
Can you do a dance for us, please?
Can you do a dance for us, please? Let's hold that thought.
Oh, no.
Well,
hold
I'll
that
see if
thought.
Joe, if we've got, try and find Uptown Funk and we'll come back to that. But only if Joe can find it. So we'll come back to that.
You're joking, right?
You what?
You're joking, no?
You'll find out. So, yes, the lady down at the front.
A friend of mine has a lot of friends and family in the Highlands and Islands, and she said, what would difference would it make if the Labour Party was in power to them?
A friend who lives in the Highlands and Islands has said it would make a difference if Labour was in power.
What difference?
Or what difference would it make in the Highlands and Islands?
A really important question, because I think the trap the Labour Party falls into in Scotland is to be seen as a central belt party. And there is no route back to a Labour government that does not reach out and win seats outside the central belt. But a fundamental crucial point is what this government is really bad at is economic development. And there are so many parts of our Highlands and Islands communities that haven't had the proper investment in terms of skills, in terms of training, in terms of jobs.
And which government do you mean when you say that?
Both governments, but fundamentally the SNP government, because obviously most of the powers and levers are devolved, is we would get economic development right and get the drivers of economic development so we can build jobs. So one practical example of that, there are so many young people right now who live in the Highlands and Islands who are forced to leave their local community because it's the only chance they've got for a training place, it's the only chance they've got for a job, it's the only chance they've got to go make a relationship, make a bond, fall in love, and never come back again. No young person should be forced to leave the local community, and that's why we've got to be a party for every part of Scotland.
And some of those islands, I mean, I've been to Arran. I mean, I've been to Jersey in the Isle of Wight. I know they're not Scottish islands. But what...
Have you got bank accounts there, Matt?
No, I wish I did.
I mean, I'm not sure this gig pays that well, does it?
What I was going to ask is, on the Isle of Wight, yes, on Jersey, it's a bit weird. There's definitely a kind of small island thing going on. Is
not,
it the same?
Not in Scotland.
Is it the same in the Scottish
Our
islands?
Island communities in Scotland are absolutely magnificent. And there's that one Rhoda MacDonald in the audience. I can't even see, but I can tell it's Rhoda MacDonald just with the sound of the whoops. But honestly, they're so neglected. Our island communities are really... And the ferry fiasco is a perfect example of that. We don't invest in the infrastructure. We don't invest in the routes. We don't invest in transport. We don't invest in skills. We don't invest in jobs. And all this talk that's been had about COP, the climate justice, and all the rest of it, the answer to so much of it is infrastructure build and integrated transport. And so much of that relates to our Highland Island communities, but they're forgotten communities. And to be frank, Labour's forgotten them as well. So a big part of our project is making sure that we engage with those communities, we're visible in those communities, find local champions in those communities, and start winning there again and making a difference.
Okay, one more question from the audience. Yes, the lady down there. Oh, actually, I'll tell you what, I will come to you at the back, because it's been very... I've basically gone to the central belt, Anas, and I will reach out to the Highlands,
Matt,
but I will take a question
if that's if that's who I think it is, that's not someone you should ever say no to. Trust me.
Oh, God.
Reaching out to the Highlands. Two questions, really.
Two questions.
Why do you accept the premise that we should be talking about Scottish independence? Because even if there is a yes vote, we know that Scotland cannot be independent. We should be talking about the breakup of the United Kingdom. Independence is a positive word. Everyone wants to be independent, but none of us can be independent. And the second question is, might Labour's prospects be better in Scotland and in the rest of the United Kingdom if we had better people representing the Labour Party? I'm old enough to remember when, you know, Gordon Brown, John Smith, George Robertson, Robin Cook, you know, TUC, you know, Brian Wilson, lots of people were on the platform. They understood Scotland, they understood where they were from. They were never parachuted into the streets. They had to fight. Might it be better if we had better representation in both the Scottish Parliament and in Westminster?
Okay, so the first bit is about the framing of independence, that in itself is a positive word rather than the breakup of the United Kingdom. And secondly, would Labour be better served on a former government, not just in England but in Scotland, if it actually had leading Scottish politicians who understood Scotland?
So on the first one, language and message is really... And you're right about exposing the consequences of independence or the breakup of the United Kingdom, as well as using the appropriate language. But we've also got to make sure, going back to that emotional argument, is we have got to make... In the last referendum, we had a facts argument and we allowed the SNP to have an emotion argument. And if and when there ever is another referendum, if we allow that to happen again, it will fundamentally fail. So we have got to make a facts-based case, but also an emotional case about why Scotland's better off being part of the United Kingdom, not just talk about the consequences of independence or the breakup of the UK. On the second one, look, people vote for people. And one of the ways that we are going to rebuild the Labour Party in Scotland is by community, ward by ward, at a council level, constituency by constituency. We have to identify not just people that we think will be effective Labour parliamentarians or politicians, but we've got to identify who are local, recognisable, local champions, Labour champions, who are going to make a difference in their communities, who are rooted in their communities, and people can feel a sense of pride that they're sending those individuals either to a council chamber or to a Scottish Parliament chamber or a Westminster chamber, because they're going to go and fight for them to make a difference. And this rebuild of the Scottish Labour Party is not going to happen in one person. This idea we elect a leader, we either let them fail or succeed, and then we just think, okay, we'll elect another one, you know, by the way the Labour leadership elections run 9 months later, is actually, how do we identify that grassroots up rebuilding of the Labour Party? That's the hard work and job we've got to do. And I can't do that alone. So if there are people in this audience, and I mean this in all sincerity, and also people back home, if you know who those local champions are in those individual communities, tell us. Let's talk to them. Let's engage with them. let's build ideas with them, and let's do what Labour's really bad at. Ask them to come and join us and stand with us to make a difference to our country.
I mean, someone here tonight could be a future MSP or MP.
That's I hope so. Anyone want to volunteer? No.
Okay, moving on. I will take the question
the
right about there. Yeah.
Just for the benefit of the audio, every single hand went up. Yep.
Yes, it was a silent but strong yes. Yes.
You said earlier that you truly believe that if you had an independence referendum tomorrow, that it would be in your favour. If that were true, why don't you back holding one?
Very good question. If you think that you would win the referendum tomorrow, why don't you support having one?
So the idea that a referendum...
Wish I'd thought of that.
Is, that's another person pitching for your job. But the idea that a referendum is a light switch moment is a fallacy. If we were to have a referendum, that is turning our entire civil service inwards. It's turning our entire country inwards. And all the energy we should be putting in to defeat this virus and to rebuild our country and to have a genuine recovery of our NHS, our education system, economic development, like I talked about before, all of it gets put on pause or standby, and we go back into that fight and debate again. And do we really want to pay that price coming through a pandemic? I don't think that's in the national interest, and that's why I'm arguing that we should be focusing on recovery, not a referendum.
Okay, I'm being told that we do have Uptown Funk. So just hold it a second. If we can ask for the house lights to return to the show state, please, because we are about to enjoy.
Now, what are you suggesting happens here? That I extract your tooth with Uptown Funk in the background?
Well, I don't know.
I will take great joy, Matt, in dancing while I'm extracting your tooth. I mean, I would love that.
Well, look, one person at least wants to see you dance.
And that's you.
That's me, and the guy who asked the question. So, I think we have got the song.
No, wait, are you genuinely going to make me dance here?
Well, we're going to play the song. It's up to you what you do.
If you are,
yeah,
I'll make you a deal.
What the fuck is this?
He's getting. You see how squeaky his voice got there? I'll make you a deal.
Yeah.
You dance with me, and if it's COVID secure, the audience can copy the moves as well.
Well, hold on.
And I will show you what the individual moves are, and then we'll put them together and do the dance.
What the fuck? Hold on. The problem is... No.
Can you run that?
No, you're not allowed to, like... You're not allowed to own it.
That is the condition. If you agree, I'll show you the four individual moves that are the key part of it. You learn them. The audience learns them. And we'll do it together.
Well, look, we haven't got time to do a full class, so...
No. It's four moves.
Well, look, we'll play the song.
Four moves. We'll play the song. I will show you. So we'll put the
volume a bit lower. I'm not fucking doing it.
Why not?
Who
thinks Matt Ford should do the dance? We are going to boycott this show if you don't do the dance now.
I'm asthmatic, man. So
I will demonstrate the four moves.
I'm clinically vulnerable. You can't.
Right, stand up, Matt. One. Big cheer for Matt Ford, everybody!
Oh,
welcome to the political party hosted by Anas Sarwar. My wonderful guest, Matt Ford.
Honestly, you come down to London, you take over. This is the real story, what happens in this country.
Right, so
Scottish politician.
So there are four.
What about independence for England?
There are four key moves. Does the audience want to do it as well?
Yeah.
Right, everyone stand up, then everyone like to stand up.
COVID. Well, it's going to be weird if just some people do.
Don't film it, what's going on?
This is meant to be on in.
If you feel like joining in, please stand up.
Who the fuck's gone?
No one is standing up.
Of course not!
Oh, no, there is. There are people standing up.
Come on.
George Robertson, stand up. George, if you don't stand up in the audience, I'm going to make you stand on stage and do it, so you better stand up, George. All right, so everyone stand up. Come on. Everyone stand up.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Oh, my God. People are actually doing
stand
this.
Stand up. Come on.
Oh, my God. At least it's not just me.
Right, so
I thought this was going to embarrass you.
Right,
this
there
is
are
the wrong
four,
way around.
Four moves.
Okay, four moves.
Four moves.
This is...
First move.
Yeah.
Sideways.
Okay, do we need the music for this or not?
Wait on this. Foot.
On the right foot.
Yes, lighter on this one. And just that's the first move.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
No, what was that?
Oh, don't even.
I mean, you're not jogging, Chief.
There's a curfew. Right, there's a curfew. Right, I'm just watching, man.
Right, ready?
doing
one
that.
One, Matt.
Okay.
Hey, Matt, ready? That's the first move.
I look like a pork joint.
First move. Second move.
Very triggering.
Second move. You can do that, come on.
Yeah, man.
Right, well, everyone else do it, come on, let me see it.
Oh, I feel like the kid who was picked last
right, football. Right hand on the left shoulder, left hand on the right shoulder.
Yeah. Where are you getting
right?
This? Yeah.
Two moves done. Third move. Ready, man?
Yeah.
So, left, right, left, right. I want to see George Robertson do that. Let me see. Hey, come on, George. Let me see that.
Oh, gosh.
Right, and the fourth move.
Oh, George Robertson used to run NATO. Fuck you now.
Fourth move. George. Fourth move.
You'll do the show one day, right?
Is my hand doing it? Is my hand doing it? Right, ready? Fourth move.
Yeah, go on. What?
Ready?
Yeah, I'm ready, man. Yeah. You just do it,
Matt,
I'll just stay.
Matt, loosen up a little bit. Come on, Chief. Yeah. You're not the dentist now.
Okay.
Ready? A wee shimmy. There you go.
You got
to do the face as well.
What's the face?
Yeah, that. Come on, let me see it. Right, let me see it. So everyone do the first move with the... Let's see it.
Okay, let's see it.
Everyone
How
got it?
Got
Second move. Third move. And fourth move.
Okay.
Right, great?
Yeah.
Okay. Should we get the music on?
Hit it. We'll do a verse and a chorus because...
Put the seat back, Chief.
Okay, yeah.
We're going to walk a little bit, right? Then we'll do it.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah, you can't leave it. Yeah.
That's all right, yeah?
You're so good at this.
Anyone that filmed that and puts it on social media is in big, big trouble.
Yeah,
with
Mark Ronson for copyright. Anyway, holy shit, what an end to the night, Anas. This has been really, really special. How did you take control of that?
It's called leadership, man.
Oh, it is. You know what I feel like? This feels like the end of a Christmas film. I feel like I've seen life for what it really is.
You feel like Hugh Grant at the end of like one of those Christmas movies, right?
Something like that, yeah. Oh, man. That was so much fun watching you do that.
Actually, I never got a chance to watch you do it because I was too busy.
No, all right. Okay,
can you put the music on again so I can watch Matt?
There's a curfew. Yeah,
should we do it? Should we watch
we'll
Matt?
Another
yeah,
time.
I can hear it. Thank you.
Yeah. That was the fucking
come on.
That is so
show. Come on, Matt.
Let's move. Oh man!
I mean,
what the fuck?
That last move had the touch of a Tory sleaze campaign right there, didn't it? I mean, seriously, Matt, you stick to the comedy, Chief.
What do you want now? My dinner money? Made me dance for the older one. Yeah, and you're younger than me. You're in the year below. What's happened? God, I'm dead in this school. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, what a special night this is. I'm knackered. I'd be so fit to be leader of the Scottish Labour Party. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a phenomenal night. I really have mixed feelings about how it's been. but it really has been very enjoyable. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, please give a huge thank you to all the staff here at the Duchess and at Avalon who made tonight possible. Thank you for coming. You can get tickets for all those future shows at mattford.com/live. But please, a huge thank you to the amazing Anas Sarwar!
Well, there you go. Anas Sawa. Oh, my word. I mean, I couldn't control him. He took absolute control of that interview. But good to get a dental assessment. And I think, actually, joking aside, I think he agreed with me that my mouth was pretty well kept. So I was happy about that. But the videos of him dancing, I mean, he can really dance. Whatever it is that you need, even small moves to make them look good, he's got it. So check my Twitter feed at Matt Ford, because there are a few videos floating around on there. And he's really good at it, to be fair. But my God, what a phenomenal guest. And just everything. Really funny, really thoughtful, really emotional, really likable. Brutal honesty about Labour's situation in Scotland and about what he has to do as an individual to change that. Brutal honesty about Labour's position across the UK and about the perils of the things that he cares about and how close they are perhaps to being lost. Just phenomenal. And of course, so emotional when he talks about the particular racism that his son's faced. And I mean, obviously, you know this stuff goes on, but it's no less shocking when you hear about it. To think of a child having to put up with that. It's just heartbreaking. And obviously, when it's just so hard to hear, but very important to hear. And Anas is one of those people that just carries it all so well. He's obviously had to suffer this stuff his whole life, but he just deals with stuff. I mean, it's a real lesson. You know, I think politicians sometimes can be very inspirational. And it's not about whether you're on the same political side as them, but obviously these are public figures who take a lot of stick. And actually, the way they deal with it and the way that they're capable sometimes of brushing it off, of course it still gets to them, but they keep going, a lot of them. And I think that can actually be very inspiring to the public, that people think, well, whatever's going on in my life, you know, they're capable of publicly having to take this stuff. And I think that's one of the kind of unacknowledged goods that politicians do. But oh my word, that was just, it flew by. It was great from start to finish. I didn't want it to end. I didn't want it to end with me being forced to dance by a very compelling politician. But there we are. That's life. Thank you so much for downloading this. Share it far and wide. If you can leave a written review on iTunes, it genuinely helps. Tell everyone about it and come and see the show live. It is wonderful being able to do it back on stage again. The Duchess Theatre is beautiful. Of course, the next one's at the Vaudeville Theatre, which, if you came to the Jess Phillips and Esther McVeigh night, is that venue. It's not far from the Duchess, just down the Strand. And then those guests coming up on Monday. My word, the 22nd of November, Anthony Scaramucci, live in the West End of London. And then 2 weeks after that, Jeremy Hunt, the former Secretary of State for Health, the former Foreign Secretary, will be with me live on stage. A fascinating politician, the man who could have become Prime Minister, maybe still will, who knows. And then the Christmas special on the 20th with Jacob Rees-Mogg, MP for Rosanna Allen Khan. And then the 10th of January, Neil Kinnock. And I'm on the verge of being able to confirm a great guest for the 24th of January as well. So phenomenal guests from across the political spectrum at various stages of their careers. It's the place to be. So get your tickets at mattford.com/live. And I'll see you soon. Ta-ra.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.